Christina Kay here. I'm the host of the Top 10 Rated podcast created for authors by authors. Write your best book. Each week, we explore a new topic that covers one of many struggles that authors face daily when it comes to the craft of writing, like characters and setting and whatnot, and the mindset issues like procrastination, imposter syndrome, etc. And normally I sit down with, some big, well-known, best-selling author, established author to have this discussion, but not this week. Nope, this week we're shaking things up a bit, and my guest host may not be someone you've heard of yet. Now, unless, of course, you're an Aunt Cheryl fan on TikTok, you know what I mean? But mark my words, in no time at all, this client will be right up there on every fantasy reader's top favorite reads list. Before I tell you about this mystery guest, let me explain the topic this week and why I chose it. We're talking about author coaching from a client's perspective. Why? Well, I'm going to be brutally honest here, folks. It's because the author community is still not quite convinced that author coaching is something they truly need. And I want to change public perception on this the best I can. Now, I understand the two main reasons authors are resistant to working with coaches. Number one, author coaching is seems to be a relatively new profession. It's only been around in its current form for about a few years, maybe five, and only more predominantly talked about in the past two or three. All right, number two, authors are already kind of jaded when it comes to shelling out their hard-earned bucks for editors and cover designers and formatters, let alone author coaches. So the thought of spending any more money is daunting, to say the least. And while I get both of these points, trust me, I'm an author, I get it, let me try to shift your thinking slightly on this and put some things into perspective. Just because something is new does not mean it's a bad thing. Guys, our parents taught us this when we were younger. In fact, coaching really has been around longer than you think because people have been mentoring other people on art, on writing, on music, and everything for centuries. It just wasn't a recognized paid profession until recently. And the truth of the matter is that, especially if you're brand new to writing or if you've tried doing it alone already with no success to show for your efforts, coaching is not only a good idea, it's probably the best idea for you. Think of it this way. If you had always wanted to be a violinist as a kid or growing up, but you got married young, had kids, had to get a day job, etc., and then your violin dreams got put on the back shelf one day. Eventually, that dream will resurface, as it always does with writing. And when your dream resurfaces, that tendency is to want to dive right in, get straight into be a violinist, and like play a concert hall. But you wouldn't do that now, would you? No, you wouldn't. Instead, you'd first have to learn the strings, the notes, and how to hold the violin. To do that, you'd likely have to hire an instructor to teach you these things. Then you'd work with the instructor for weeks, months, or longer until you could go from screeching out Mary Had a Little Lamb to playing a lovely Mozart piece. Then and only then would you ever consider sharing your passion with the world. Writing a book is no different, folks, or at least it shouldn't be. But since I know I still have a lot of people to convince, I figured there was no better way than to take an entire week to give you information about coaching from a client's perspective. And so I've chosen one of my most successful clients today, Coda Kai Levette. You'll hear how we met and worked together in this discussion, so I won't get into it now and spoil it for you. But just know that Coda's book, Rigoria, Voyage of Tears, released on Amazon this week. And guys, people are clamoring to purchase this book. And the reviews are already popping up. 5 stars here, 5 stars there. To learn how Coda had such a successful book launch after working with us for 6 months or less, and this is after 7 years of toiling away on his manuscript, 7 years, then you need to keep listening. So without further ado, I bring you my client / team member / friend, Coda Kai Levette. Okay, guys, welcome back to Write Your Best Book, the top 10 podcast created for authors by authors. We're on episode 68, and can you believe we've gotten that far? Oh my gosh, we're about a year and a half in. This week, I'm so, so excited to bring you not only another great author, but a friend, a colleague, a team member, a fellow TikToker, all the things. His name is Coda Levette.
And we're going to talk to you about author coaching from a client perspective. So rather than me talking at you constantly like I do about how great client coaching is, I thought we'd flip the script and let you hear it from Coda's point of view because he's done it all. So first, let's start by just saying hi, Coda, and welcome to the show.
Oh, is that me? I lied. Maybe I am nervous. What do you know?
You guys, I'm going to warn you now. I'm not even going to cut that. So we're going to leave that. We're going to have fun with it. And that's just how this show is going to be because you'll see what it's like when Coda and I work together. So here we go. All right. Hi, Coda. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me on here.
Sure thing. Well, let's get started right from the very beginning. How did you come up with the concept for your book, Rigoria, Voyage of Tears? And when did you first start writing it?
Oh, so honestly, for that, we got to go back quite a few years. I would say probably back to around 2013. Yeah, 2013. I was 17 years old. I had just finished writing my very first story ever it's still on Wattpad. If you search my name, you'll find it. And after I finished it, I started thinking about what I wanted to write next. And I don't know what it was. Well, I know what it was. I wanted a female hero. I wanted a heroine, and tell a story from a woman's perspective. And the reason being is because I grew up just enriched in strong female-led stories. You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I watched when I was 7, I started watching it. And then Elizabeth Swann, Princess Leia, Storm, Michonne, all of these just badass women that I just absolutely adored. So I had this vision of just this kind of redheaded, kind of jaded, guarded soldier. And I loved what I was seeing, even though it was in my brain. I just loved everything that was going together. But the hardest part was coming up with her name. I wanted to create a name. I didn't want to just use a stock name. And it got to the point where it was getting so hard that I was like, okay, maybe I should use a stock name or take like a normal name and like put a spin on it. So I went through Ramona. That was the first one I went through. Then there was Victoriana, and then there was Bryn. And I was kind of, and Bryn was the one that I almost went with. And this is where it gets weird. I can't explain this part.
We like weird here. Fine.
I realized that I was, even though I was leaning towards Bryn, I realized that's not what I wanted. And for like a flash of a second, like my brain just became like one of those crossword puzzles, mm-hmm. Word searches. That's what I'm thinking of, the word searches. And the letters just aligned for a fraction of a second, but I caught it and I wrote it down. And that's what ended up being Rigoria. And I was like, that's it, done. No changing that whatsoever. And so I started writing it when I was about 18. I stopped to research it because it takes place, I don't want to call it a steampunk story, but it does take place in a fairly steampunky time frame in regards to the world that she lives in. So I had to stop and I researched steampunk. I researched Victorian era terminologies, all the concepts that go into creating those stories. And then I got the first draft done probably when I was 21, 22, knew it was bad, knew it was awful. And it wasn't until probably about a few months before I met you, I started to rewrite it. You know, I didn't have a computer at the time. So my boss at my current job, we had dual monitors. So he would let me come in early or stay late if I wanted to, so I can work on my writing. So I'd have the old chapter on one screen and then I'd start writing the new one as I went. And this kind of using what I always called it was the shit drafts, and just kind of use that as this kind of the build off of when I was doing the rewrites.
Wow. You know, I don't think I knew about 95% of that story. I knew about the boss that let you write there and everything, but I don't think I ever got the story behind Rigoria's name. I love that. So this week, Hoda, you know, we're discussing author coaching from an author's perspective. And I'm always curious to know this. So how did you find Write Your Best Book, me, my account, whatever? Sounds weird saying, how'd you find me? So how did, and when, why did you ultimately reach out to our team about author coaching?
All right. So this is actually a fun story. I'm really looking forward to telling this one. I will try to word it delicately for your viewers here, but.
Okay. We just don't do F-bombs. Other than that, we're good.
Okay. So it was back when I was not in the current apartment that you see now. Me and my fiance, we had two roommates that were just awful. And my fiance and I.
Great. I mean, really?
Our current one is chill. Like, we love him.
Good.
And it got to a point, like, I used to be friends with these people, but they were so toxic and so manipulative, and I didn't see it till after we moved in. And I cut that friendship off while we were still living together, which made it really, which it was a good choice and a bad choice at the same time. So my mental health plummeted. And I needed my daily dose of dopamine. So I partook in the electric lettuce. I'm sure you and your viewers will put together what that means.
I think somehow.
And I just started mindlessly scrolling through TikTok. I wasn't even watching the videos. I would scroll, double tap. Even if I didn't like it, I don't know. I didn't pay attention. I would just scroll, double tap, scroll. And then you popped up. And I remember exactly what video it was. You were talking about the compelling scenes and how to write compelling scenes. It was one of your earlier videos.
Yeah, I was going to say that forever ago.
And you know, you had said, like, you know, the components of a book. You got the book, you got your chapter, you got your scenes, your paragraphs, sentences, and then you said, and then your words, but you hiccuped like somewhere down that ladder.
Yeah.
You caught yourself, you acknowledged it, which I really liked. You didn't just try to like brush it off or even redo it so that it was just one perfect take. You left it in there. And on top of that, you stated your opinion of the matter was you thought the scenes were the most important. Mm-hmm. And what I like that is you didn't word it as, don't listen to anybody else. The scenes are what make the book. You said, in my opinion, the scenes are what make the book. You didn't come out of, you know, the woodwork all miss know-it-all. You had this leeway that you were willing to work with in regards to yourself. So I slapped that follow button. I was like, all right, let's see if this helps me take somewhere. And then I saw you were doing lives. So I started going into your lives. And this is the part you'll get familiar with, because I was in there question after question after question.
And
what I loved about that was, is like you would answer, like a lot of the questions I asked you, I was like 90% sure of the answer of. And so when you, I think maybe once or twice you had said something that was completely opposite of what I thought, but for the most part, you had said something that I already knew. And so it was kind of like an ego boost for me. I was like, okay, so maybe I should get kick my ass into gear here real quick, because I'm clearly not doing that bad.
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
And that's all she wrote. You acknowledged that everything that you were talking, well, not everything, but the first view I saw, you acknowledged that the answer to the question was up to individualism and there was no set in stone answer. And that's what made me reach out and had me send that first email to you.
That's really cool. I love hearing that. I have one client who told me her story of how she met or how she found us. And she had played a trick on me during the onboarding process and I didn't even know it. Casey, she had said that she buried a very obvious error in her sample edit. And none of the other editors that she had sent her submissions to had ever caught it. I was the only one that caught it. So it's always interesting to hear. I know that's a good idea though, isn't it? It's always, a little bit of an ego boost to hear those things, but it's more about affirming than boosting ego, because it's good to hear that what I think I'm trying to do right, which is what's our logo motto, teaching, supporting, encouraging. That's what I want to do. I don't want to push down anybody's throat and I don't want to, you know, discourage on the other end either. So that's very good to hear. Just what was it about coaching per se too, that also made you like, I need coaching. whether it was me or anybody else, like what made you kind of realize, yeah, I need coaching? Or that
it was beneficial? I was in one of your lives and you had answered a question for one of the users and they did not like your answer. And I, when you read the question, I knew the answer already. It was one of the, and that wasn't even like I was a 90% sure of the answer. It was no, dude, you don't do that. Don't do that. Yeah, absolutely yeah. not. Don't do it. And you backed that up. And he kind of threw like a bit of a tizzy.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, when I was watching your lives, and this isn't me talking to you like right now. This is like my mindset when this happened is like when I'm watching like her lives, she has said things that didn't quite sit right with me. But the one thing that just kind of dissipated all of that was, okay, well, she's a published author. I'm not. So maybe I got a little unpacking to do. So that's what kind of turned me into coaching is because like, you know, you weren't rude. You answered the question, he flipped off and you didn't even acknowledge it. You just kind of kept scrolling. And I was like, maybe I'm ready to just admit that I need help. Because if I can have that kind of big enough mindset to be like, you know, she's a professional in the industry. I'm a guy smoking on his couch. Maybe there's something there.
Something's gotta give.
I sent that very first email and then that was that.
That was that. Now, speaking of that very first email and like our onboarding process was a little bit different. And I know, remember when I first sent you these questions, I forgot to go back in and change them. So let's do this because I can't remember how I was supposed to properly word this question. But the essence of this question is, tell me how we went from that process, because now we have like several different ways we're connected. You're on my team, we're, you know, we do coaching. Now you're training, if you don't mind me saying, to learn to be a coach yourself and all these things we're doing together. How did that all evolve?
Well, the seed was planted as just a wee little TikTok follower. And then when I sent you that first email, I was so nervous about that first email, even though I got a feel as to kind of who you were as a person, because I've been watching you for probably like a week or not a week, like a month or so. I was like, this is it. And there's a commitment, because you had also said that like, you want to help as many people as you can, but you just didn't have the time for just a bunch of free consultations. And I was like, what if we don't fit? What if I waste your time? What if this, what if that? I'm a failure. That's how my brain devolves. And that fast too. But I sent it. And then I got an email back from you. It was either probably like, it had to have been like maybe a couple of hours after I sent it, but
24, hopefully.
Yeah, but it was like was like within that same day, and I got a little scared because when the email popped up, it just said my name, comma, and half of my brain was like, "Oh, okay, she's being very professional." The other half of my brain was, she's being stern because she hates you. You should let that consume you. So I clicked it and I was like, oh God. And then the first line was, I absolutely adore you. And I was like, stop.
This is like a trip down like memory lane or something, because I totally forgot all this. This is great.
Yeah, so I was like, okay. And so we set up my free consultation meeting.
That's what I meant to ask. Now we're on track. Okay.
Yeah, we set up the first free consultation. Consultation meeting. Mm-hmm. And we didn't go too in depth. I told you kind of what the premise of it was. I told you my genre. I told you this, told you that. And you had said, okay, well, do you want to give it a go and take the next step? And I was like, I do, but finances, I don't have any. So let me talk it with my fiance real quick. And my fiance looked at me as like, if you truly believe this is going to help you, do it. Yeah. And he had said, he goes, you're the one in control of the finances. Like I make my share of the money. Mm-hmm. You break it all down. I don't want to deal with that. If you think we're in a good enough spot to where you can afford this on a somewhat regular basis, you have my blessing. And I was like, okay, And so I emailed you back again. I was like, I can afford it. I can afford it better if we do it this way, this way, this way, and this way.
We had
one coaching call. You sent me the form that asked about, you know, what was the name of my book officially? What was it? Give me like some plot details, give me some character names. And I filled out that form. And then we had that very first coaching call, that actual one. And it went pretty good. You gave me some details. You helped me get on a writing schedule. That was the very first tip that you gave me. And I took that and I ran with it. And now I'm doing it every morning. And then what really solidified everything was you had that webinar that I paid money that I did not have to attend.
Yes, I remember this too.
And at the end of that webinar, you had a product that you had a bunch of products that you were giving.
Yeah.
And I also spent money I didn't have on that as well. There was a lot of credit cards usage in the very beginning of this process.
What might be going on? I don't know.
I was going through, I wasn't even ready to be published yet, but I went through everything you sent me from the, when you just get your idea part, which didn't apply to me because I already had my idea, all the way through down to the, now you're ready to publish your book part, which also didn't apply to me because I wasn't quite there yet either. I was not in the middle, but I was kind of just a little bit past it. And so, yeah, like my onboarding process was different because unlike a lot of what I feel like your clients probably had, there was just a lot more going on.
Yeah.
Write your best book wise that I was like, I was picking dandelions out of a field. I was like, I want this. I want this. I want this. I want that.
And look how it's paid off.
Exactly.
What we're going to do next, I have to take a break for the mid-roll sponsorship, but we'll pause that thought and we'll come back. And I want us to kind of transition a little bit and get into talking about, okay, so we've talked about coaching. Let's talk about the end benefit, like what it became, what Rigoria became and where we're at now. So let's just take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and we'll be right back. Now, I know we finally just started airing sponsors again during the mid-roll break a few weeks ago, but honestly, it felt wrong to talk about anything else aside from our coaching and editing services this week. And actually, I want to focus right now on the editing side of our business because, as you'll hear in the second part of the interview, Coda did not just hire me as his coach. He hired me and my editing team to polish his book baby to perfection. And that is a big factor in a book's success as coaching or a great cover or anything else. Y'all already know by now that you can't just write a book, slap it up on Amazon, and hope it sells, even if you have a decent cover. Sure, you may sell a few up front, just to your friends and family and whatnot, but when reviews start rolling in about your book not being edited, and trust me, they can be brutal, your sales will immediately stop. And worst of all, your reputation is at stake here, and you don't want that kind of review on your profile permanently. We all know the internet is permanent, guys. Not to mention, and this is where I get clapped back at quite often, but it's true, so I'm gonna say it, no one can edit their own manuscript perfectly. Let me repeat, no one can edit their own manuscript perfectly. Sure, you can edit to some degree, and you should, after you finish your manuscript draft. But folks, there's this phenomenon called brain mapping. This is just a fancy word for explaining how our minds are incapable of seeing our own mistakes. Y'all think about it for just a second. Our brains won't even acknowledge our own personality, like faults and traits and things. It makes sense. I'll give you one quick example of brain mapping when it comes to editing. Let's say you have written this really beautiful sentence that you're super proud of. Then you go back to self-edit. When you do, you'll read that sentence and still think it's perfect. But guess what? If you sent that same exact sentence to a second person, especially someone trained to edit, they will tell you, guess what? You left out the word the, or you misspelled something very simple. You'll get frustrated and you'll think, but I read that over several times. And I'm sure you did, but you will never see that missing word or misspelled word, not in every instance. And the reason is that our minds see what we imagine we wrote or intended to write, not what we actually wrote on the page. That is just one example of brain mapping. So you need a professional editor. Okay, we got it. That's established. But you don't just need any editor. You need the best editing team currently in the business. And you can learn all about that awesome editing team, best in the business, by visiting writeyourbestbook.com and looking at the About Us page near the bottom. And since I don't want to drag this out any longer, let me give you quickly some highlights of why you should hire Write Your Best Book to edit your manuscript. Number one, we always have a team of no less than four editors, including myself, which means we almost never have a wait list. Two, we always stick to a very strict turnaround time of 4 to 6 weeks, no more. Three, everyone on my team has no less than 5 years of experience working not just in freelance, but for publishers. Four, our rates are not only competitive, they are lower than any similar, there's not very many, but similar service teams out there. Five, we have a cool, very fun onboarding process and lots of cool freebies for our clients. Lost count. Number six, clients get access to exclusive app that allows you to communicate and check in with us anytime you want. Whatever number we're on now, we don't just edit your book. We teach you how to be a better writer by including a memo that goes along with your edited manuscript. Whatever number we're on now, all clients get tons of free resources, services. We edit your blurb for free, your website content, all that stuff for free. And everyone gets free sample edits and exact quotes just by asking. So if you want your free sample edit and quote, reach out now using the form on our website or by emailing us directly at info@writeyourbestbook.com. Now let's wrap up my discussion with Coda so you can learn more about him, his book, and how my team and I helped him make his dreams come true.
Okay, we're back in the studio with Coda Levette, and as promised, we're going to shift gears a little bit. Coda has been kind enough to take me on a trip down memory lane about how we first met and how he came to be a client, why he decided he needed author coaching. Now, we're going to talk about his book, Rigoria, Voyage of Tears, and we're going to do it in a more specific way as to how coaching has helped him go from that idea that he had, 10 years ago, and now make his dreams are coming true. So we're going to talk about how all that unfolded. So, all right, you finished the manuscript for Rigoria, and you did that while we were doing the coaching, I believe. And you decided to stick with me and my editing team, which we also offer an editing team, as everybody knows, to help polish that manuscript. What did you like most about the editing process, and what did you find helpful? Maybe even what you didn't find helpful, or what was that process like for you that maybe set us apart from other editors that you've seen or heard of?
Well, for one, I was just astounded with how thorough everyone was. The first round was the content editing and the line editing. And I remember you had handled the content editing, and then another woman had helped with the line editing.
Kirsty
was the second one. I think the first one was Jen. And you know, at first it was terrifying because I opened my manuscript to all of these red lines, and I was like, what did I do?
Panic town.
I was like, I just wrote this entire damn thing. Now I got to reread again. And yeah, you're right. That's better. Approve. And yeah, you're right. I misspelled that very obvious word. Approve. I apparently don't know how to use semicolons. All right. Approve. And it was definitely overwhelming when I first got it, but not in the sense that like it affected me poorly or negatively or anything. Like I didn't have an anxiety attack like I thought I was going to.
We weren't worried at all about it either.
The content editing was actually, it wasn't hard, but it was just a nice challenge because you pointed out some holes that I genuinely didn't think of. And I was like, you're right. I don't know how that makes sense if that happened. Let me figure out how that's supposed to work. Oh, it doesn't. Let me change it. And then what I also loved is I had the ability to reject certain changes. Mm-hmm. nothing changed, was set in stone or anything like that. And it's not to say that what was advised was wrong.
Yeah.
It was just like some things just didn't quite fall in line. Like, for example, I know you had done this, and I think Kirsty had also done this, had mentioned the word kingdoms terms of where Gregory is from.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And which, I mean, kingdoms existed in that world at one point, I'm sure. I haven't written those stories yet. But in terms of where Gregory's time period takes place, for some reason, that word just didn't fit the tone. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to be like, no, we're going to keep that. Yeah. We're going to, yeah. But I had that option, whereas otherwise, from what I've researched in terms of traditional publishing, you don't get that option. And a lot of editors, even freelance editors, don't give you that option. So I'm blessed that I got to have that, because I mean, if I'm like, I'm holding my very first physical copy right now,
people, go ahead and hold it up. Oh my God, you guys who are only on audio are missing this cover.
if I were to open it right now and read it and say, here he goes, how the royal carriage strolled through the city of Shale. If that was changed to the kingdom of Shale, I would have been so pissed.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been so mad, because not that there's anything wrong with the word kingdom. The
vision that you had for it, which is
right.
What it boils down to, that I have said for 10 years when I first started doing this, I will change your commas. I will get rid of all your semicolons and I will get rid of your adverbs. But what I'll never do is I will never ask you to change your vision. That's just not going to happen. Right. So that's good to hear that translated, because that's what we don't want to do, is we don't want to ever stomp all over your vision and change it. And if that word works better, and there's nothing wrong with the word, it's spelled right and everything, then go for it. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. And that's why, like, it was just small things. Another example being, this is a quick one. When I first got my manuscript back, Shale Manor was changed to Castle Shale. And I was like, you see, like,
mm-hmm.
you're picking up what I'm throwing down. You're just, you're fumbling with it a little bit. Yeah. Because before I started writing it, like, I knew what terms and words people were used to in the specific genre, and both castle and manor both kind of fit in the fantasy genre, depending on how the story is told. So it was just small things that I just didn't agree with. And it wasn't like it was an issue. Nobody made a fuss. I even read the paragraph to make sure. I was like, does kingdom fit better? Mm-hmm. Right. So, and yeah, I had that nice option, which a lot of people don't have.
That's true. That's very, very true. And I'm glad to hear that resonates, because it's very important to me that anybody listening or any clients or even followers on TikTok or wherever know that I'm not going to change your vision. I don't believe in that. In fact, you know, I've said before, there are no bad story ideas. I maybe have heard in over 10 years of doing this, one that sticks out in my mind is like, that was a really bad idea. but really, even then, it's not the idea. It's in the execution. It's what it always boils down to, is the execution. So I'm not going to mess with authors' ideas. Not ever. All right. So let's see what else we're going to do now. All right. While my team was editing Gregoria, you and I also started kind of getting back into the coaching a little bit. And this time we worked on the getting you ready for the publishing and the self-publishing and the book launch process. So tell me some of the things that you learned maybe that you didn't realize before during this process. And why did you find this part so crucial to your writing career, if you did?
Well, first and foremost, back cover blurbs can go catch every single disease known to man.
Yes,
that was harder than writing the damn book. And I feel like back cover blurbs are to us as authors as what intro songs are to live music performers, because both kind of set the tone for the music set or the book for the consumer. And there's a lot of pressure there. Like, they have to like that intro song, or they have to like that blurb.
It all depends on whether you get that right. And that's a lot of pressure.
Right, exactly. And then there was my ignorance to how smooth the things would be after the editing process. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just going to be like, all right, I got the manuscript back. I approved the changes, fix this, fix that. I got my cover. I'm just going to upload it into KDP. No, that was definitely not how it worked. There was a bunch of specific little details I had to do, some of which pertain specifically to my genre, fantasy, that I didn't take into account for. Of course, I'm drawing a blank of like an example of one now. That cover blurb does also apply to that. But there's like there's like little things like tags, keywords, stuff like that that are specific to my genre. And it's just like, can you just die? I quit. I don't want to be an author anymore. That's not true, of course. But there was formatting. Formatting was super fun. Formatting and working with the cover designer were both super fun experiences for me. Cover designer specifically because
Let's give her a shout out. So who did your cover?
That would be Ashley with Redbird Designs. Yes, and she did a phenomenal job.
Yes, she did. Guys, I really wish audio could see this. I don't know how we can do this to audio, but if you haven't, you want to check out his website his website. But also, and we'll give you all the links at the end, Coda. We'll get all your links and things. But guys, check out on his Facebook page or TikTok or wherever. You can see this cover. It's gorgeous. I mean, it fits the story because I've read it. It fits the story perfectly. It is perfect to the genre. It's all the things we've talked about when we've discussed cover designs, how it has to be, you know, it has to kind of fall within the genre expectations and reader it's great. So Ashley at Redbird Designs, she's always been in my top three. She did a knockout job.
Absolutely. But that was also my biggest struggle at the same time, including the formatter, which is another Ashley as well.
Another Ashley.
It was like, I recognize that, like, you know, this is my book, baby. This is my story. But I am, and like, you know this, my TikTok viewers know this, I am a pretty insecure guy, and I hate feeling like I'm being extraordinarily picky. I was picky with the cover. Like, the only complaint I had, and it's not even a complaint, it's just a note, and it's just something I tell people, because people ask, like, is that what she looks like? I mean, her hair's in a ponytail for 99% of the book, but other than that, that's pretty much it.
But you have to take those things into consideration, and that it just looks better on the cover to have the flowing red hair.
Right, exactly. And, you know, Ashley from Redbird was like, it's not going to look exactly like her. And so I found that image and I was like, okay, this is pretty doggone close, if I do say so myself. Just change the coloring of the hair and the clothes a bit, and we are golden. And then with the other Ashley, like, I was specific on how I wanted the headers to look and stuff like that. And that was my biggest struggle, was this battle I had with myself. I was like, Coda, it's your book. This is their job. Tell them what you want. It's like, okay.
There's a lot to learn from that. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So, and the best thing that I think I learned is that even through all of the blood, sweat, and tears, there are still fun parts about this. Like seeing your cover for the first time, even if it's not an official copy, getting your proofread book that has your name on it. Mm-hmm. It's all worth it. And I think that's the biggest takeaway, is through all of the grueling busy work, you're going to have this astronomical sense of euphoria by the end of it. And I think that's something worth digging through all of that crap for.
I agree 100%. All right. I have one more question for you. And then I want to get your links, your bio, all that good stuff. We'll get that all and we'll put them in the show notes and we'll wrap her up. But as you mentioned, as we both mentioned earlier, we met on TikTok last year. And this was like when you were early on it and I was as far as this writing journey, and I was new on it. And you were just starting your account, I think, right? Or close. But since then, you have built an amazing following to, like, what is it, like 200,000 or close?
Almost 175,000.
Awesome. And I think personally, it's mostly because of your hilarious toxic family member videos, like Aunt Cheryl, and then your recently introduced cousin Tay. Tay, yeah, that's right. People love it. But in all seriousness, the side benefit of all that
was it allowed you to build excitement and anticipation among all those followers for Gregoria's release. So tell my listeners real quick before we have to go, from your personal experience, how crucial it is to first build and establish a strong following, then engage, then hype your book before it even hits the bookshelves.
Oh my God, super important, because like, here's the thing, you can follow all the steps. You can do everything right. And if you do that, you're going to see some nice pennies falling in your pocket. I guarantee you. However, people are going to be a lot more willing to buy your product if they know who it's coming from. So my Aunt Cheryl videos put me on the map, right? And the early Aunt Cheryl videos were talking about my writing. And some of them were actually based off true stories. Like the first four or five were actually based off true, real interactions I had with an aunt. And then I ran out of stories. I was like, well, this is what's getting me followers and views. Yeah. I went off the rails with it. And after the seventh or eighth one, I noticed, every time I post an Aunt Cheryl video, I get over 15,000 views. Mm-hmm. So then I used Aunt Cheryl as a marketing ploy. And I had this whole story about how she wanted to sue me, how she wanted to crash my wedding, all this leading all the way up to this fake court date skit that I had, in which I did my cover reveal, hitting her with the book.
Brilliant.
But I don't want to say it was important, but it's super beneficial to build your following up. From the get-go, because if people know you, if people know the kind of fun goofball of a person you are, and you're not just all like, look at me, I'm Coder, I write dark fantasy books, they're going to be a lot more willing.
Out of nowhere with, hey, guess what? I just published a book. You want to buy it? Yeah.
Right.
The other end of the spectrum.
And the other thing you got to take into consideration is like, authors, not even just authors, entertainers, people that we grew up adoring, they're getting exposed every which way nowadays. And everyone's a little on edge, walking through, trying to figure like, okay, this person, this book looks good. Is this author going to make a homophobic comment about me or something?
Are they going to turn into Rachel Hollis? I mean,
right. Like, are they going to get like, would never badmouth an author. I'm not going to say her name, but there's a particular author who had a very popular book that included sparkling forest living beings, who when I actually started reading, when I actually reread the books recently and watched the movies, oh my God, it is so racist.
Now you got me wanting to watch them again.
I was like, it was so bad. And that's just, and it's like these, it's all underlying that we don't see when we're 14 years old reading those books. And it's after like we're in our 20s and able to dissect media and narratives and literature that we're just like, okay.
It's like the hidden Easter bunny or Easter eggs that are in all the Disney movies. I remember that was
right
for a while. Like, it's crazy.
Right. So yeah. And like, I don't want to let anybody down. So I put myself out there right from the get-go, even told a very personal thing. And again, I'll word this delicately. But you know, like I've had fun in my time before I met Jake, you know,
has been a party boy in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have definitely seen people posting pictures of me having said fun times online. And I had two options. I was like, okay, I can get bent out of shape about this and completely, you know, and react how any normal person would, you know, granted, or I can tell them that it's there. And I have taken that power for myself.
You sure did. I remember
I have set the boundary, and I told people in the video, I was like, if you see them, have fun, because it's not a scandal if you turn it into a scavenger hunt.
Ooh, I love that. That's the perfect note to end on. I love that. It's not a scandal. Well, and even if it's not a scavenger hunt, you've taken the scandal out of it. You've taken the fun, basically, out of it for the people who want to dig it. Oh, look what we found. Well, guess what? I owned that like 3 months ago. So what now? You know?
Right.
So yeah, I agree. We can end it on the note that it is absolutely, it's like the old marketing triad or whatever it's called, the know, like, and trust factor. It goes straight to that. Like if you come out of nowhere, like I said earlier, if you come out of nowhere on Facebook or in these groups or on TikTok and you just start right out of the gate with, hi, my name is Christina and I just wrote a book. Would you please buy my book? Please, 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 please. If you do that, people are going to shut you out because they don't know you. They're not going to invest in that. They have no vested interest in what you're doing. But
right,
from a few months ahead of time, even 3 months of just being very active on social, being engaging, talking to people, then by the time you say, oh yeah, by the way, I have this book, then it, oh my gosh, and you've done a great job at it. And so what I want to do is I want to give everybody an opportunity to find, like, follow, all that. So before we close, give us ways to do that. Give us your social handles, your website, how we can find Rigoria and when. Well, no, by now it's out. So how we can find Rigoria, sign up for newsletters, whatever. The ball is in your court, and then we'll put these links in the show notes.
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, pretty much on all social media platforms, it's Kota Kai Levette. KotaKaiLovett. Kota Kai Levette. That's on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, technically Facebook, but it's not an at. It's my actual name, Kota Kai Levette. My website, www.kotakailevette.com. And then there's also another app that is, it's new, so it's a little buggy, but it works a lot like TikTok, but without a lot of the hassle of getting banned for literally no reason whatsoever, called Clapper. It's actually formatted pretty much exactly the same way. It's not quite as user-friendly, but, and this is an important but, you're not going to get shadow banned for simply existing. Maybe you said a swear on accident and TikTok was like, nope, that video's gone. Clapper is going to be like, hey, you can smoke a bowl bitching about the moon. I don't care. You be you. Yeah, it's new. It's not perfect yet. I haven't perfected it yet, but it's there. And it took me, I want to say maybe 6 months to get 1,000 followers on TikTok. I had 1,000 followers on Clapper in 2 days.
Oh, wow. Huh.
Yeah.
That. All right, so we did website, social media handles. Do you have a newsletter on your website?
I do. You can subscribe to it. And if you do subscribe, you will get the first 3 chapters of Rigoria for free once I know how to figure out how to do that. But it's coming. It's coming. You'll get them, I promise.
Go ahead and sign up because you will get it. And listen, you guys, if you haven't figured out by now, Kota's fun. He's easy to listen to, easy to talk to. So you know that whatever he puts out, whether it's videos on TikTok or a book or a newsletter, you're going to want to follow it. You're going to want to read it. You're going to want to watch it. So go do that. And thank you, Kota, for being, first of all, part of our team. You've done a great job so far. You've been wonderful. You've been a great client, great student, great everything. What are you going to say?
You can also find Rigoria on Amazon. I forgot to mention
that. Yes, we did forget that. But it's in the links in the show notes, guys, so you can find it, just not if you're driving. And thank you for everything. Thanks for being on the show. And get back to work. And then I'll see you later. Bye, guys.
All righty. Bye.
Yeah.
Well, that was just about one of the most fun episodes I think I've ever recorded. I know I've said that a few times, but I think you could hear in there how much fun Kota and I have together. And I think I've made my point about why you need to seek the help of a professional coach and an editor before you publish your book. So I'll just keep this outro short. But before you go anywhere, don't click off just yet. I have to tell you something that you must hear. And it's not a sales thing for me. It's for you. Now, I had this brilliant idea last week, and I want to share it with you all now. How would you, like 30 or 60 seconds on our top 10 rated podcast, if I haven't said that enough, to plug your book, right? That would be awesome, right? I've never done this before, but I just decided to open our sponsorship of the podcast to more than just businesses and service providers. Guys, that takes contracts and all these blah, blah, blah. It takes forever. So what I decided to do is allow authors to purchase airtime right here on the podcast and get access to, get this, our average 21,000 listeners. Guys, that's over 20,000 potential new readers for your books. I don't know why I never thought of this before. Now, I'm not going to accept everybody. That's true. But if you get accepted, you can choose to record the content yourself and send it to me. And we'll give you all the info you need. Or you can allow us to record it for you and you just give us the info we need. Either way is fine. But the price is the same for both. And this is the cool part. All right. To secure a 30-second mid-roll sponsorship, the price is only $97. And to secure a 60-second roll that will go early in my intro, the price is $197. That's major exposure for your books for less than $200. And guys, it's way less than you'll pay for Amazon or Facebook ads, and more effective, if I might frankly say. If you'd like to get your book mentioned on our podcast or even have you speak on our podcast about your book and increase your readership exponentially, send me an email at info@writeyourbestbook.com, or better yet, fill out the contact form on our contact us page at writeyourbestbook.com. Remember, guys, all links are in the show notes. Be sure when you use the contact us form, though, to check the box podcast. Then tell me in the open-ended answer that you want to purchase a 30 or 60-second roll ad in our podcast. Someone will get back to you within 24 hours, and your ad could wind up on our podcast in less than 2 weeks from now. All right, that's all we have. Please be sure to follow us at Write Your Best Book on Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, TikTok, you name it, we're there. Also, be sure to check every Thursday for our new blog post that's up on the website. And of course, every Friday, tune in to Write Your Best Book, the podcast, and hit that subscribe button, guys, so that you never miss a single great episode. That's all the time we have for this week, folks. Stay tuned, and I'll speak to you next week. But in the meantime, go write your best book.